Welcome to episode 17 of the Canuck Crosscast. Today, we preview Nationals. Oh, wait. We talk about Nationals. And not a whole lot else. But good to catch up, break some breaking news, chat about it. Nationals is canceled, in case you didn't gather that, or postponed. And go from there, chat about the rest of the season. How's it going, Jen?
It's going good. This is actually great news for me. This Nationals postponement. So it's today.
Yeah, tell us what you did.
Today is November 19th, and a couple weeks ago, I crashed my bike, and I pretty much pile drove my quad into a fence post railing, and I have basically a really really bad Charlie horse, like a quad contusion. So I've been pretty out of commission for a couple weeks and had basically decided I wasn't going to be able to race Nationals because I haven't been able to ride my bike. I can't bend my leg enough to ride the bike, so I'm just taking some hard downtime to let it recover. So yeah, I was not going to be able to race Nationals next week. And then today, November 19th, the organizers decided that they were going to postpone Nationals, Canadian Cyclocross Nationals, until the January 7th, 8th, I believe.
And we should probably give some background there for the people who aren't living it, I guess. So the reason that Nationals are postponed, so last week, or I guess...
It wasn't postponed to give me a fighting chance to be there.
That's right. They were like,
"Jen can't
be there."
That's not why they did it.
No, the reason they were postponed is over the course of Sunday and Monday, basically from Vancouver and the whole band of rain moved east. Did you guys get it in Kamloops or not really?
Yeah, we got some heavy rain. We thought the basement of the bike shop was going to flood.
Okay, so Vancouver through Kamloops, maybe even more, got like an insane amount of rain. I can't even explain how much rain it was. It was 200 millimeters plus, 200, 250 millimeters over the course of 2 days out here.
It was like over the months worth of rain in like less than 48 hours.
Yeah, and it was absolutely pouring. So I did a race on Saturday and Sunday, and it was like Sunday was one of the wettest races I'd ever done. The course was literally filling up with water as we were racing it. Like puddles that were this deep. By this deep, I'm saying like 6 inches deep, ended up being a foot deep by the end of the race. And it was pretty crazy. And I think probably like a lot of people, I was like, oh, it's really wet out. Like, I guess that's concerning. But then Monday kept on raining that hard and things started to flood. Like where I live in Chilliwack is about 45 minutes to an hour east of Vancouver. And Chilliwack and the adjacent city, Abbotsford, are largely on these fairly low-lying plains, and especially Abbotsford, big chunks of the farmland there are on an area that used to be a lake.
The flattest ride I have ever done in my life was one around the fields from your house. Literally, like, not even 10 meters of elevation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's flat. So big chunks of this Abbotsford farmland are at about 3 meters above sea level, which isn't very much. And so it started raining a lot, and basically what happened is all of the water coming down off of the mountains, all of the water filling these rivers, ended up blowing through the dike system that was kind of built to hold it back and started filling up this old lake bottom, and is still kind of filling up that lake bottom. And with the dike system not intact, it hasn't been able to protect this farmland and the thousands of homes that are there. So, you know, to put it in simple terms, there's about 90 to 100 square kilometers of farmland and about 1,000 homes, thousands of people displaced all in the Fraser Valley. And that doesn't even include the town of Merritt that have been evacuated, the town of Princeton that's been evacuated. The fact that those places and the better part of the interior are totally cut off from the rest of Canada, because the four major highways, so that's Highway 3, Highway 5, Highway 1, and Highway 99, all sustained some like pretty significant damages.
Like mudslides, flooding, like the big one, the Coquihalla, they lost some bridges and they said it's going to be like several months before they can even start.
Oh yeah, like you can't build a bridge at 1,200 meters elevation in the winter.
No, and that's like, this kind of flooding, you know, could be generalized as like a more of a spring phenomenon when you have lots of snow melt and then heavy rain, but it came like just as we're heading into freezing season. So it's really, this is why the organizers decided to postpone, was because there is like a catastrophe going on right now. Like,
I think it's a combination of reasons, right? It's definitely that there's, like you said, there's a catastrophe. Like, BC declared a state of emergency. There are, like I said, thousands upon thousands of people who, like, don't have homes anymore. They're underwater. Not to mention the fact, like, as someone organizing a race, like, people can't get to your race. As of today, I live in Chilliwack. To get to Abbotsford, which should be about 30 minutes away, it's about a 3-hour drive right now, because you have to backtrack. Like, the main highway, Highway 1, is totally flooded. You backtrack all the way around. If you wanted to come from, say, Kelowna to get to Vancouver, you'd have to go through the U.S.
Yeah, and, like, I literally could not get there without basically going to Alberta, or I guess going through Kelowna, and then down through the States, up to Vancouver, and then take the ferry. And so, like, yeah, Kamloops is super cut off from you guys. So, like, even if I could go, I wouldn't be able to go unless I could book a flight or something. So, yeah, it was a tough decision. Like, it puts the organizers in such a tough spot because, I mean, they have to run it in January now. Like, is there going to be an appetite for people to come out to the event, or is it going to be extremely small? Like, from a just like a citizen level, you know, participant level, it's a challenging time of year to train for an event if most people are kind of in snow. And then for yourself, like, are you going to be coming back from Europe and just come straight back and then go to nationals now?
Yeah, that's kind of the plan. So I did get a call from someone at Cycling Canada before they made the decision. Partly, I think, because I'm in an area that's very affected by this. Like, my house is dry, but I've been posting photos on Instagram all week of, like, stuff that's within a 10 or 15 minute ride from my house that is absolutely flooded. And it's been, you know, pretty shocking. But so partly because of that, I think partly because I'm the national champion and partly because I'm on the working group, and they want to make sure that the elites would still be able to make this work. And the answer is yes. Like, I think a lot of us would be going over for that Christmas period, coming back early January, and it's very feasible to race nationals on the 8th. And if anything, in my planning cycle, it's a pretty good spot to have it. I was a little worried about having as big a gap between my Christmas period and Worlds as there was. So that's not to take away from the fact that, like you said, this is a challenging time of year for all masters athletes to race, anyone who's not, you know, living in a fair weather climate. And I would hardly count Victoria and Chilliwack and, you know, Vancouver at that time of year as a fair weather climate either, but we can ride outside, right?
Yeah, like a lot of people in Ontario, like if I was living, you know, in Horseshoe Valley where my parents are, like it's winter, there's snow. Like I would have to dig out a path to ride along. So, and even for myself here in Kamloops, like we get winter here. it's like there's, you know, 10 centimeters of snow in town right now that just fell in the past couple days. So, I mean, I'm blessed by this. I don't know if blessed is a good word to use in this situation, but like it's one of those things where it's like, wow, this just gave me a second chance. And this is the second time kind of a natural disaster, like global disaster, has kind of saved me from being in a bad place physically, because the pandemic kind of saved my 2020 season because I was super burnt out and chronically fatigued. So the pandemic saved that season and gave me another chance by having it run late in the year. And this natural disaster has given me time to hopefully have a chance at racing nationals again. But that is another kind of interesting, funny, not funny thing, is it seems to be that when I win national titles, it is followed by a subsequent severe leg injury.
This one's significantly less severe than your last one, though.
I broke my kneecap, I was out, like I was out for about 6 weeks, and the prognosis on my leg is it's been 3 weeks, and it's probably like another at least two. before I'm functional again. Okay. So it's similar, but it's with soft tissue injuries. It's just a bit tricky, right? Because it's not like a bone, once it's healed, then it's like the bone is back together. You just got to work through kind of the side effects of being immobilized. Like, I'm actually just waiting for the muscle to heal before I can do anything.
Okay. I mean, yeah, fair enough. I guess the always the idea of shattering a bone, like you did especially, is like more grotesque. But yeah, I agree. It's
pretty straightforward. Like, as long as the bone heals and like they've like pinned it correctly and they've braced it correctly, it just heals. But like muscles, there's a lot more gray around it. So
what was your first reaction then when you heard that Nationals had been postponed? Was it relief? Was it like, oh good, I get to race it?
It was more like, dang.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, my reaction was like, that's a tough move. I didn't my second thought was, oh, I might be able to be ready for that. My first like reaction was, that's a tough call that they had to make to do that. And just like either run it now or to cancel. Like, it's just like my first reaction was like, that's a tough call.
I agree. And I think anyone who's criticizing this, I haven't been on social media that much and paying attention to what people have been saying about it, but if someone's criticizing this, I think that's always important to remember. No organizer goes into their event being like, I hope we have to cancel and postpone it, right? Nobody wants to do that. That's the last thing on your mind. And nobody is planning for like for a natural disaster, essentially.
No, that's not in your kind of your action plans for if something does happen. You're not planning for this kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's just kind of nuts. And, geez, yeah, it's one of those things that's just like, okay, we have, like, I have more time. It seems like it'll fit into your schedule okay, but.
Honestly, I still am. I had, like, a little bit of a sense of relief, honestly, when it was canceled. I think this last, like, the logistics even of me getting there were infinitely more complicated than they would have been a week ago. And that was certainly part of it. I'd been going through different plans. Like, now that there is a route open, I could drive there or drive and ferry there, and that's easy enough. But, like, I had plans of, like, you know, getting someone in a private plane to fly me to Nationals and pretty ridiculous things like that because I felt like I needed to be there. So that, there's certainly some stress of the logistics, but honestly, just riding around here and seeing the damage from like a climate catastrophe, a climate disaster, my head's not been in the game the last week at all. From a training standpoint, you know, it's tough. It's tough to be training, and admittedly, I've intentionally been going to like check out the damage every training ride, but it's tough to do intervals while like people's homes are underwater. Besides you, right? And while
these are your neighbors, right? Like these are people that you know personally, but I'm sure some of them, but they're your neighbors.
Absolutely. I have friends whose house is under a foot of water now. There's like, I think they've been saying there's 20,000 head of livestock, and a lot of them were rescued, but some of them weren't. So like I said, my head just has not been in the game this past week as far as training goes, like it should be. A week out from Nationals. And I think, like I said, when the announcement was made, I was like, oh, like I was, you know, I was stressed about the fact that we're in this, and then stressed about the fact that I just like was not preparing for Nationals the way that you should, the way that a race like that deserves. And this relieves some of that pressure for sure.
Yeah, and then that kind of, it all plays into, I'm sure the organizers felt some of those same, just like bigger picture things than just the race. And that was probably weighing on them too, as far as how do we run a good event, but then what is really important here now.
For sure, it's tough I think it's tough to have this event where you're like, hey, everybody from all over the place, let's travel here and like celebrate cycling while not that far away, again, there's like people who just lost everything they like worked towards for 25 years. And I realize that's maybe a little bit of a like, there have been a lot of natural disasters and all over the world, but having something this close to you, I think, puts it in a different perspective. You know, it's so easy when you see something happening in another country or another place, or even the forest fires in like California, to be like, ah, that's really tough. I empathize with those people. Turn off the TV. Let's go for a bike ride.
Well, it's like, I had a bit of that this summer, and even just this like a few days ago, I went to Silver Star to visit a couple friends, and I drove through Monte Lake, which was mm-hmm. one of the towns near Kamloops that was just absolutely leveled by the forest fires this summer. So like, the forest fires, I think, certainly affected me like in the summer, in that like it's difficult to train when there's this happening. And I mean, that's kind of what you're going through now with the flooding. And then, yeah, you just to see that, like, these natural disasters, like, we just got, like, BC's just getting leveled this year.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, it's not that I was trying to ignore climate change at any point before this, but, like, this year, it's like, yeah, if you're still ignoring it, you're not paying attention, right? Like, your eyes are closed. It's definitely to the point now where it's like, okay, if, you know, I think with something like climate action, it's always been we should do something about that. And then you just kind of, you know, continue on with your life. At least that's what I felt for myself. It's like, yeah, we should do something. I should, I recycle. That's pretty good. You're like, well, but lately that seems harder and harder. It seems harder and harder to think that way. It's like, no, I need to do something about that. And I know that one person doesn't make that much of a difference, but like, what other choice do you have? And I think it's tough as a cyclist, because at least I've always felt like I shouldn't take a stand on something like that, because it, like, I fly everywhere. It seems a little bit hypocritical, right? And that's always a tough thing.
I don't think it's about you're going to live your life, but it's about living it a little bit better. Like, how do you can't give up everything. Like, no one, like, if you really wanted to have no environmental impact, you would have to pack yourself up, go move into the woods and just like forage for food. And there's very few people who would actually be able to do that. Like, none of us are going to be perfect or saints when it comes to environmental impact, but you can reduce it if you're conscious about reducing it and making a positive impact. I think that's
mm-hmm. something. Absolutely. And like, just thinking about ways to do that, because, you know, the transportation of cycling is for sure challenging, and it's one of the reasons.
It's ridiculous.
And I think for, like, and what's even crazier to me, and I know some people don't have an option if they want to go ride your mountain bike, but like, driving to the trailhead to go ride your mountain bike just bends my brain a little bit.
That's why I got an e-bike.
I have a hard time.
You get to the trails faster.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I don't really have any answers. I've just been thinking a lot more about it. And I think, of course I am, because it's like staring you right in the face every single ride. But it's harder and harder to be like, you know, just like look at it like, yeah, we should do something like that, or it's going to affect our children or affect some people in another country. It's like, no, that ship has sailed. Like, it's affecting us right now.
Yes.
Very pretty much so. Crazily in this past 6 months. Not even 6 months, probably like 4 months.
Yes.
So Canuck Crosscast. Haven't talked much about bikes yet.
Well, we did talk about nationals, and then it segued into climate activism.
I don't know. It's sometimes it's just wild to me, like, you know, even the new, like, the idea that, like, we have new kit day and we get all this new stuff all the time. And sometimes I'm just like, what do I need out of this? Like, is there a way that you can reduce your, you know, reduce what we're using that way?
I usually need the new chamois.
Sometimes the old ones are smoked. Yeah.
Well, how about we tell me more about Aldergrove?
Yeah, so I
saw photos of river crossings.
River crossing. So, okay, backing up to Aldergrove. Aldergrove is maybe the most, I hate using this term, I've used it a number of times on the podcast, the most European cyclocross course that we have locally here. It's heavy, it's hard, even on a dry day it's hilly. Frankly, it doesn't look that different from what Eurochamps did, like a giant bowl. And we just got these super muddy conditions, and, you know, it ended up being kind of a swamp on day two. But even the first day, it was slippery, slimy, muddy, great tech features, good sand pit. I don't know, on days like that, like, you don't have that many opportunities to race a muddy race. To race on a muddy track that's taped and that feels like one of those big courses. You know, maybe in a year we get like half a dozen mudders. So I think sometimes people look at that and shy away from it because they rightly don't want to smash their equipment in a year when it's really hard to get equipment. But I guess I kind of look at it and be like, this is an opportunity to practice these things on a taped course, to go really hard for an hour on a course that I like, on a course that's heavy, on a course that simulates the stuff I'll be racing in December and, you know, at Worlds. Like, that doesn't happen very often. So I just kind of went as hard as I could for 2 days in a row and tried to be there on the last lap, imagining that this was the last lap of a World Cup, and still doing that effort, because I've been guilty in the past of like backing it off at the local races if I knew I had the win. And I tried to make a conscious effort not to do that, you know, and just like keep pushing right to the end, because all those reasons I said, like, this isn't something you get to do all the time on a course like that.
No, it sounded pretty epic. And for those, so if people need to go and go through the socials and see some of these photos of the, especially the second day when like the water started to come, it's like it's the kind of race that if you're into it, it is going to be an awesome mission out there.
Oh yeah. It was actually one of those ones where I was counting down, not necessarily just laps, but like counting down features to the end of the lap and how many more times you'd have to do that feature, where you'd be like, ooh, made it up that hill, only three more of those, right? And I just know in my head, I know when that's going, you're like, oh, this is a hard race, like, we are slogging out there. When you're like, ooh, I managed to stay on my bike that entire climb, that's cool, I only have to do that, you know, two more times.
These little segments, yeah, when you start like just chunking it up more and more and more, because like the mental energy it takes to process in addition to the physical energy is just so much that it warrants its own point of focus.
And like, that's the stuff I love. You just lose track. Like, I honestly lose track of how long the race is. You're like, I don't know, I could have been out here for 10 minutes, I could be on my third hour, like, I have no idea, right? I'm just out here like trying to get up this thing, and then trying to ride this next thing, and then try to get through the next thing. And you're like, eventually someone rings a bell and you're like, okay, I guess I just have to do all those things one more time.
Yeah. Were Cody and Leaf there?
Yeah, Cody and Leaf were both there. They got the better of me at like a little local race three and a half weeks ago. So I had a bone to pick with them and took off kind of on the first lap.
Yeah. See you later, kids.
Yeah, you gotta have to show the kids what's up every now and then.
Mm-hmm. So Leaf's still a junior, and Cody's, is he under 23 now?
They are both under 23.
Oh, right, because it's like a year ahead for cross.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. Like, I like seeing, it was great to be able to travel with Leaf to all this stuff. It's great to be able to race against both him and Cody. Like, I don't know, I don't think you realize it, but eventually you wake up one day and you're like, oh, I'm one of the old guys now, aren't I? And you're like excited for the challenge from like the next group, the next kids. And, you know, I kind of go to the races like wanting to beat them really badly, but also like really hoping they can bring it, right? It's just a different phase than it was even when I won my first nationals like 4 years ago. Yeah.
Well, you know they're getting faster. Like, you know they're getting faster, and you're like, okay, just how much faster have they gotten? And, like, you're looking forward to it, right? Because you know them as well. They're both kind of pseudo-teammates for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm like, eventually, one day when I stop racing, you know, I always hope that, like, your handing off, I don't know if that's the right word, that I'm like, would be leaving Racing Cross and someone else is going to like step in and, you know, be there battling the U.S. guys for the podium, be there like duking it out for good World Cup results. And hopefully it's two or three people and like it just keeps on building from there.
So I guess, so that was the local racing. Did you watch the World Cups last weekend in Tabor?
I did.
Oh my gosh. Were those not absolute bangers?
Oh yeah.
I think fast racing, it makes it exciting because it just like seeing people going fast is exciting, which is, you know, sometimes when the course is really heavy and slow, it doesn't quite like seem as exciting.
I know what you
it's
mean.
It's like you can tell it's a battle, but when it's a fast race, it's a little bit more like just like as a spectator, more to process. And that course was fast, but those are the racing was so good too.
Oh, and like I'm such a big Lars fan. Can I be a Lars fan? Yeah, I'm a big Lars fan.
My dad texted me after because he watched it as well, and he said, "Good to see Lars did so well." And I'm like, "Is anybody not a fan of that guy? At least quietly, he seems to be like the consummate underdog, but now he's the top dog. He's winning stuff. He's just like, maybe it's because he's little too.
He's also just like a very pleasant human being. I think even all the interviews you give, you can tell this guy is enjoying talking to these reporters and having a good time, and he's not just doing it because it's part of his job. And maybe some people just don't have that personality and that's not their fault, right? But something about Lars,
your personality is not your fault.
Quote. End quote.
Yeah, that's all. We'll take that that's out right. of context.
You have a deeply flawed personality, Jen, but it's not your fault. You know what I mean. Like, some people are introverted and not comfortable talking to other people, and that's just, like, what it is. That's, like, they... Yeah. I'm gonna stop talking. Anyways, I root for Lars. I like him. I was pumped to see him not only win, but, like, win in this fast, kind of dynamic bunch sprint and, like, take Ellie Iserbit out, because for whatever reason, I cheer against Ellie Iserbit and for Lars.
Yeah, for whatever reason, like, I don't know why, or, like, it just...
So your little theory is no good, because Ellie's also little.
No, yeah. It's not. I think he's got, like, aggressive features. Maybe that's why.
So what you're saying is he has angular features, but it's not his fault?
Yeah, it's not his fault. He just looks, like, really, like, intense. I don't know if he looks like... Oh, gosh. Not sure what they're...
An elf.
Yeah, a little bit elf-like, but it's not that I hate elves.
I don't know why. Yeah, I don't know how this is leading to you not liking him.
No, I don't. All. I don't know why. But you kind of said the same thing. He's just like, for whatever reason, he's kind of hard to cheer for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why.
And I think in order to make cyclocross fun to watch, you gotta pick people to cheer for. It makes it so much better than just being like, ooh, whoever wins, wins, you know? I like to rise and fall and have my hopes crushed on a regular basis, so. But Lars is doing well for me now.
Yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy.
And then, like, Lucinda threw down too, but I cheer for Celine, so it's been tough times this year.
I think, so it's interesting kind of seeing the arc of her season. Like, I think she had a pretty good... Like, she had a good cross season last year. She didn't maybe dominate or have the same, like, streak of dominance that she did the previous season, like, the 2019-2020 season, where she had, like, hot streaks and was winning. But she was still very competitive and won some big races last year. Like, she won Dutch and Euro champs and then had some other... She probably won... I think she did win a World Cup last year. If not, she had some podiums. So, like... But then seeing her come into, I think she started racing, like, she got into the road season pretty early, like, you know, kind of women's world tour, and kind of just got clobbered in the spring. And then she showed up to the first couple mountain bike World Cups in Albstadt and Novo Mesto. And, like, for someone who is, like, you know, absolutely world class on a cross bike and has, like, good bike handling skills and had been, like, on the podium the fall previously in the under 23 race, she was just, like, a total non-factor in the mountain bike World Cups. And just, yeah, you can just tell when someone is riding tired. So she just seemed to be riding tired and on the mountain bike and on the road through the spring and summer. I think she was trying to make a push for the Olympics, but it just didn't materialize at all. And maybe she struggled from that through the late summer, and why she took a late start to the cross season. I read or heard somewhere that she had like some like low blood markers and just wasn't super healthy. So, I mean, it's like she's still there. Like, she's still like top five, top half dozen. It's funny that we're talking
about her not being there when she's been like, let me read you her results this year. 4th, 5th, 4th, 6th, 14th, 3rd, 9th. Like,
yeah, but that's still so different than where she's proven she can be. Like, she's there or thereabouts, mm-hmm. but she isn't like really just able to like be in the race to win.
Yeah,
like the third place she had in Zonhoven, like she kind of like came up into it, but she was never at the front. So I think she's just finding her feet. Like, it takes time to come back and probably to find the confidence. You know, she'll probably win a smaller race in the next little while, and then she'll be on a good trajectory from there.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Like, and to put that, you were saying about her last year, she won 10 races last year, it looks like. And the year before that, she probably won, oh geez, maybe double that amount. But like, she was barely off the podium in 1920. She still, like you said, had a really good season last year. Again, was like on the podium more races than she wasn't. But yeah, I hope she comes into it, because like I said, I like cheering for her for whatever reason. I think it's just like the way she races.
She's a nice rider. What did Dill say? She's just like such an athlete. She's just super athletic. That's like why he roots for her. She's just like nimble on off the bike. I cheer for Lucinda. Like, I think, and partly because of her, like, coming from, like, you know, kind of being a roadie and then coming to cross and then, you know, kind of doing away with like some of the stereotypes about her, like, you know, bike handling skills.
She's a good bike handler now. Like, she's really good.
Well, and that's like why I cheer for her, is like, yeah, she committed. Like, she's like, you know what, road is coming second. I'm like going to be the best cross racer I can be, and be the best cross racer, period. And I just think that's super, super sick. So I cheer for her
for in sure. That way. I have also come around. I almost don't want to say it. I've come around to cheering for Denise Betsema. And I was like pretty anti-Betsema following.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were.
Following the you know, the doping positive.
The Haterade. Everyone was drinking, all in North America, a lot of people were just drinking the Haterade. And it was like, I think the revelations this past year with Katie Compton has kind of softened
things. That's exactly it.
Betsema.
That's exactly it. Since Katie tested positive, my stance toward Betsema has softened a lot, and to the point where I'm like enjoying watching her race, because she's also a very good bike handler and a good racer. And I guess I almost don't like this because it's a defeatist attitude, but I was like, look, I don't know what anyone's taking. I know what I'm taking, which isn't anything. I don't know what anyone else is taking. Like, I just need to enjoy the bike racing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not about like ignoring the situation that there probably are people out there cheating. It's just about not letting being a pessimist or being a skepticist ruin your enjoyment of the sport.
Absolutely. And my attitude as an athlete has always been like, I can't spend any energy dwelling on who may or may not be cheating, because what am I going to do about it? It's not my job to catch them. And like, I know some athletes spend a lot of energy thinking about like who might be, you know, robbing them of places, but I've always been like, look, like, I can't be in a race thinking that person ahead of me might be taking drugs. It's not a healthy attitude. I'll just spend way too much time focusing on it. Like,
what you think doesn't change anything. You can only act on your own.
Absolutely. And like, you have to trust, I have to trust, as much as they've botched things so much in the past, like UCI, USADA, WADA is doing their job, and I know a lot of people would scoff at that idea, but again, it's like, it doesn't do me any good to spend so much time thinking, you know, speculating on who's doing what. And same thing, it doesn't, like, with the Betsema thing, like, yeah, she got caught for something. She did serve a doping sentence, and she's racing now, and I enjoy watching her race. Like, that's all it comes down to. She's a good bike racer, and I think people will hear that and be like, I can't believe you would say that, but I don't know. I guess with the Katie Compton stuff, I realize, like, how little I actually know about who's doing what, and at a certain point, like, you just gotta enjoy the sport.
Yeah, don't just hate somebody on principle.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, yeah, that's interesting, because I definitely feel like a lot of people, like, have come around to similar places, you know, and I think it's kind of nice to see in a lot of ways, because the hate that everyone had for Betsema, like, I definitely was uncomfortable watching her do well prior to the Katie Compton stuff, but it was also extremely uncomfortable for me watching how really just, like, rude and... It was almost immature, it felt like, the like how people were treating her. It just felt super, it made me uncomfortable. It just was, it seemed unfair, the level of hate that people were directing towards her. Even though I was also uncomfortable watching her race because I just didn't know. But it was more uncomfortable seeing how people were treating her. So, yeah, it's nice that there's just less hate and it can just be more about racing.
Yeah.
And there's so many good things to be excited about. There's so many other things, like.
Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not like you have to ignore it at all. I think, like, this is part of who Denise Betsema is at this point in time, you know, exonerated or not, depending on what you think of that. And I frankly am pretty skeptical of anything that your pharmacist mixes for you, whether it's tainted or not. But, like, that's,
I mean,
part
things
of her...
like this have happened in Canada, right? Like, literally through the Canadian Sport Institutes, like, athletes were getting supplements made in a, you know, what they believed was a safe environment because the sport institutes could be trusted, and then they tested positive. So it's like, it can actually be that someone just F's up. So
and at this point, like, that's part of her story. Like, she wins a race, and, like, probably in that news article, she'll be like, Denise Betsema, who tested positive for so-and-so in 2018, but, like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm still a little conflicted about it, if you can't tell, but I think we're kind of hitting the same notes here.
There's other exciting stuff, like Puck just sending those barriers in the women's race. I was rooting for her in that race as well. And you could see at the end, she could see how she felt like she'd lost that race. She didn't win second. She felt like she lost
the That's win. A sign that she's going to win soon, in my mind, right? Like, as soon as you stop seeing a young rider like that celebrate for the podium and start seeing them being disappointed for not winning, you're like, okay, something's coming for them.
Yeah, right? No, like, it was super cool. And, like, so I remember my first race in Europe ever was Namur in 2018. And I remember this teeny little ginger in Dutch national team kit, like, racing around her at that World Cup. And then realizing when I saw the results that she was literally like 15 years old and being like, oh my gosh, she is a child. And yeah, ever since then, she's gone on to become very fast, and I basically haven't raced cross since then. So anyways,
I mean, I raced her once. I mean, one of them was a U23 race, but she's got like 3 seconds in a row. I see why she's upset about getting second again. Mm-hmm. Right? She got second at the Overijse World Cup to it's not Kata Blanca Vos, it's Blanca Kata Vos. What did Ruby tell us?
I'm not sure.
It's Blanca Kata Vos, not Kata Blanca Vos. The other Vos. She got second to Van Anroy at Euro Champs and got second to Brand at De Boer. So, like, anyone thinking that Puck Peters, she's a good bike handler, is gonna win Coxsida, wouldn't bet against it.
Yeah, there's so much running in Coxsida that it's like, I think she's it's about being a sufficient runner, I think. Not necessarily about being the best runner, but Brand is also she's a very strong runner.
And Betsema has cleaned up at Coxsida before.
Yeah, I think that was her first win. Yeah. Whatever, back in 2017, 2018.
So maybe we're spinning into the preview for the race that we haven't thought that much about, but, like, yeah, I mean, is that our podium right there? Brand? In what order? I'm going... I'm going Peters, Puck Peters. Denise Betsema, Lucinda Brand, and Celine's going to have to be in the top five for one more weekend before lighting it up for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I think Betsema will get it.
Okay.
I think she was a bit off the past weekend, but I think that's because she's probably pegs herself being better for Coxsize. She's kind of running through the World Cup, like in Tabor, so that she can.
All right. Okay, men's side. Men's side, you can go first here. Who's going to win this thing?
Ellie.
No.
Ellie will win.
No, don't do that. Okay, you think Ellie's going
to
win.
You know what? I am obliged to cheer for him because he won on my birthday last year.
Okay, so.
So, I'm picking him. And then I think in second... Oh, this is hard. I don't think Lars is going to be on the podium for this race.
No.
I think we might see a Sweek come back for the podium. I put Sweek in third.
Mm-hmm.
And who else is... I feel like there's so many different guys who have been there or thereabouts. And we just throw Toon in second because he's always second to Ellie. Except for when he's not.
You're going... Okay. That's not bad, Ellie Toon Sweek. I think this is going to be the one race a year that Sweek wins. He always gets his one big one, right? This is it.
He does, yeah.
As long as there's not...
You're looking at a list. You have a list or something up. You're looking at people's names. I'm having to do this off the cuff. I was wondering where Ventura and Out's been.
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't actually found results from it yet. I've been trying to look for them, so I seem smart.
I can see you looking for them. I'm just trying to remember. Oh, there it is.
Okay. Here we go. So, in 20... Last time we raced here, Matthew Vanderpoel won. Guess who was second? Lorenz Sweek. Ahead of Toon Aerts, Lars Vanderhaar, Quentin Hermans, Corne Van Kessel. Oh, this is not looking good for you with Ellie. Ellie was 13th.
He always has those days. He's either in it to win it or he bins it.
He finished behind Tom Mewson and David Vanderpoel. No offense to those guys, but like, that's not good for him.
Ellie's a win it or bin it.
So I think my Sweek guess is looking good here. And Lars was fourth, by the way. So don't doubt him. So in a Vanderpoel-less race, that's actually third.
All right. I think we should also, if we just like backtrack a tiny bit, Magaly had a really good race in Tabor too.
Oh yeah, we've buried the lead. We started this podcast to talk about Canadian cyclocross racers, and we have since not talked about Canadian cyclocross racers.
We forgot. Well, we didn't forget. It was just we were talking. She's because she was in Europe. That's why.
Yeah, she was 10th.
She was 10th. But when I watched the start, I cringed as I watched her just fall backwards through the pack. I was like, no, she didn't. Like, she just didn't. She had a second row call up. And I'm like, Magaly's a good starter. She's in the middle. Nice. And then gun goes off and she just like drops one row right away. And I was like, oh no, she missed her pedal. And then she just keeps going backwards. And she must have like been through the first corner in like mid pack, like 20 or 30th. And I was like, oh no, this is not good. But then we didn't see her the whole race. But then she rode back up to like 10th, which is pretty sick. Like, she was moving out there. Like, I don't know. I was disappointed for her that happening, but just seeing some, like, I got her newsletter and I saw, I was like, yeah, she was disappointed about that, but like felt like she had a really strong race. So,
and she showed up and did the Euro thing on, you know, probably a little jet lag, not having the mega setup that all the Euro riders have. Like, they went in for that World Cup and like came home right away, right? Or she there for
they were concept. On a mission. They were just like boom in out.
Yeah, and it's good to see that. Like, it's good to see. Magaly's done the longer trips in Europe, and I think it's hard being away from your home for that long, right? And like, if it's good to see her figuring out ways to do this where she can like hopefully race well throughout the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, like that type of trip, they clearly had it very well planned out, so it would be like, yeah, they were like go go go, but it would have been still been quite low stress because they had everything super dialed. And I think that makes it exciting too, like that feeling of I'm on a mission, like in, out, like.
There we go. Place your bets now. Magaly, top five for world championships.
I mean, I know she wants more than that, but I think podium. She's on some super good form this year. So it'll be exciting. I'll put Magley on the podium for Canadian Nationals too, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, there's Jen Jackson and Ruby West, so third spot she might have a chance at.
Sydney McGill has been racing really well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. So Magley might be fourth.
I literally haven't raced cross in 2 years. So when this injury happened, I was, like, pretty down. And then, like, because last year I kind of bailed out mostly, like, COVID-wise. And I was, like, had this injury, so I was, like, taken out of this season. I was, like, I've quit more cross seasons than I've started.
So, yeah, how long do you think the moniker of Jen Jackson cyclocross star will follow you then?
I don't know. I, like, literally did, like, the one season we did together was, like, my one season. And, like, the year before, I had, like, a bit of a season where I did, like, you know, Nationals, Pan Ams, and then Christmas. But this, yeah.
Such a classic cyclocross move. Hey, do you guys know that Julian Alaphilippe is cyclocross? So did Peter Sagan. Cyclocross racers. You're like, all right, yeah. Cross. Just chill. Be cool, guys.
Raced,
be cool.
They raced cross once. I know. It's like, I really hope I get to do Nationals it's now. Like, I could come around for that so I can actually, like, feel somewhat legitimate in saying that I race cross, because I feel like such a fraud.
I'm sure it's exactly like when someone, like, sets their foot in Aurelia. It's like, Aurelia, home of so-and-so. Like, okay, yeah. They were there for 2 weeks.
I don't even
weeks.
Know if I'm good at this sport anymore. Like, I literally haven't done it in 2 years. Like, it's all, like, hypothetical.
I mean, hypothetically, you were the second best cyclocross racer last time you did it in Canada.
This is true. My record is very good at Nationals. I've never been off the podium at Cross Nationals.
Ooh.
I've never been less than second. I've never been better than second either. I've only been second.
You were second in your AWI year too?
Yeah, I was second. I had a big battle with Sandra that year on the Nationals day, and then a big battle with Catherine the next day. So that was cool. Yeah, I was second twice. But, like, the second year was, like, I was actually in the race. Like, first time Magley just CEO'd us all. So, we'll see.
Perfect. I feel like this is pretty much a wrap here. We've covered a wide range of topics.
We did. You did.
I wasn't sure what we were going to talk about for an hour, but here we are.
No, he just, like, sent me a text, like, half an hour ago. We should record because Nationals got postponed. And I was like, okay, just let me get a blanket, sit down and eat some dinner, because my landlords, we'll just talk about another range of topics, like we are getting our fireplaces fixed because, like, the remotes and, like, they're kind of having trouble turning on. So anyways, the fireplace guy came in this morning when I was at work, and apparently they need to replace a part, but it won't work at all until they get the part. So it's a bit cool in my basement apartment here, so
you should be excited. When it's cold, I love sleeping with, like, 1,000 blankets just weighing you down, pressing you into the bed.
Well, yeah, like, and the sleeping's great, but it's just the existing that it's a bit cold.
Right. I mean, you should just go to sleep now. Problem solved.
Yeah, I might. Kind of tired. It's amazing how tired doing nothing can make you. Although I've been going to work.
No, I hear
but
you.
But otherwise, pretty much
like,
nothing.
The first day back to training after rest week is rough.
Yeah, just imagine what the first day back to training after, like, 3 weeks of pretty much nothing
is. And you can't even, like, I always start, wow, we're getting so sidetracked. I always start, like, jumping off of stuff when I've rested for too long. Like, I'll be on a walk jumping over things, and then I know it's time. But you can't really jump over things with your injury.
No, I literally can't. It's very frustrating. Like, I tried to remobilize and get going a bit last week, and it was too soon, so it kind of set me back. So it's been challenging, and I just hope I come out of it sooner than later and come out of it okay.
Just in time for January 8th Cross Nationals.
Yeah, exactly. That's the plan. It's going to be a test of, like, how fit can you get in, like, 3 weeks.
I think at some point here we'll have to do, because I've done this. I know you. Have you done this? Anyways. How to train in the winter for cyclocross races. I've trained for, like, 3 or 4 world championships living in Edmonton and not riding on the trainer very much. I've got tips for y'all, masters.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. How about, we check back in a couple weeks, and it's, like, now that this is kind of the path that people are on.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. You'll end up being a wicked good bike handler out of it. That's for sure.
You're saying you're a goodbye candler, hey?
I'm saying that I used to be a goodbye candler when I rode around in the snow all the time, and that skill is maybe left, maybe stayed, to be determined.
Yeah. Yeah, I rode the snow a lot when I was in uni, and just all I had was a bike, so it's basically like riding mud, I think.
It's like riding mud that doesn't collect. Like, you know how when you push into mud, eventually it stops you? Yeah. The snow doesn't do that. I remember doing like full 360s on my commutes, sometimes by accident, because I refused to run studded tires too. And you'd be like going down the road, and you just like hit a weird patch, you're like, whoop! You're like, hey, still standing, sweet.
Yeah, I meant to do that.
Yeah. Anyone get that video?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, let's chat about that, and then yeah, we'll be you'll be heading down to Pan Ams.
Yeah, we'll do a pre or post Pan Ams cast. Yeah. All right, we're dragging this on. Talk to you later, Jen.
Good chatting with you. Recording stopped.